cathedral, with a ceiling so high it was lost in the gloom. Dozens of other tunnels led off in different directions, each echoing with ghostly voices. The thing that made Frank nervous was the floor. It was a gruesome mosaic of bones and gems, human femurs, hip bones, and ribs, twisted and fused together into a smooth surface, dotted with diamonds and rubies. The bones formed patterns, like skeletal contortionists tumbling together, curling to protect the precious stones, a dance of death and riches.
"Touch nothing," Hazel said.
"Wasn't planning on it,"
Leo muttered. Jason scanned the exits.
"Which way now?"
For once, Nico looked uncertain.
"This should be the room where the priests invoked the most powerful spirits. One of these passages leads deeper into the temple, to the third level and the altar of Hades himself. But which?"
"That one,"
Frank pointed. In a doorway at the opposite end of the room, a ghostly Roman legionnaire beckoned to them. His face was misty and indistinct, but Frank got the feeling the ghost was looking directly at him. Hazel frowned.
"Why that one?"
"You don't see the ghost?"
Frank asked.
"Ghost?"
Nico asked. Okay, if Frank was seeing a ghost that the underworld kids couldn't see, something was definitely wrong. He felt like the floor was vibrating underneath him. Then he realized it was vibrating.
"We need to get to that exit," he said. "Now!"
Hazel almost had to tackle him to restrain him.
"Wait, Frank. This floor is not stable. And underneath, well, I'm not sure what's underneath. I need to scout a safe path."
"Hurry then," he urged.
He drew his bow and herded Hazel along as fast as he dared. Leo scrambled behind him to provide light. The others guarded the rear. Frank could tell he was scaring his friends, but he couldn't help it. He knew in his gut they had only seconds before... In front of them, the legionnaire ghost vaporized. The cavern reverberated with monstrous roars. Dozens, maybe hundreds of enemies coming from every direction. Frank recognized the throaty bellow of the Earthborn, the screech of griffins, the guttural war cries of cyclopes. All sounds he remembered from the Battle of New Rome, amplified underground, echoing in his head even louder than the war god's voices.
"Hazel, don't stop,"
Nico ordered. He pulled the scepter of Diocletian from his belt. Piper and Jason drew their swords as the monsters spilled into the cavern. A vanguard of six-armed Earthborn threw a volley of stones that shattered the bone and jewel floor like ice. A fissure spread across the center of the room, coming straight toward Leo and Hazel. No time for caution. Frank tackled his friends, and the three of them skidded across the cavern, landing at the edge of the ghost's tunnel as rocks and spears flew overhead.
"Go!"
Frank yelled.
"Go, go!"
Hazel and Leo scrambled into the tunnel, which seemed to be the only one free of monsters. Frank wasn't sure that was a good sign. 2 meters in, Leo turned.
"The others!"
The entire cavern shuddered. Frank looked back and his courage crumbled to dust. Dividing the cavern was a new 15-meter-wide chasm, spanned only by 2 rickety stretches of bone flooring. The bulk of the monster army was on the opposite side, howling in frustration and throwing whatever they could find, including each other. Some attempted to cross the bridges, which creaked and crackled under their weight. Jason, Piper, and Nico stood on the near side of the chasm, which was good, but they were surrounded by a ring of cyclopes and hellhounds. More monsters kept pouring in from the side corridors, while griffins wheeled overhead, undeterred by the crumbling floor. The 3 demigods would never make it to the tunnel. Even if Jason tried to fly them, they'd be shot out of the air. Frank remembered the voice of his ancestor.
At the break, you must take charge.
We have to help them, Hazel said.
Frank's mind raced, doing battle calculations. He saw exactly what would happen, where and when his friends would be overwhelmed, how all six of them would die here in this cavern, unless Frank changed the equation.
Nico!
He yelled.
The scepter!
Nico raised Diocletian's scepter, and the cavern air shimmered purple. Ghosts climbed from the fissure and seeped from the walls, an entire Roman legion in full battle gear. They began taking on physical form, like walking corpses, but they seemed confused. Jason yelled in Latin, ordering them to form ranks and attack. The undead just shuffled among the monsters, causing momentary confusion, but that wouldn't last. Frank turned to Hazel and Leo.
You two keep going.
Hazel's eyes widened.
What? No!
You have to.
It was the hardest thing Frank had ever done, but he knew it was the only choice.
Find the doors. Save Annabeth and Percy.
But...
Leo glanced over Frank's shoulder.
Hit the deck!
Frank dove for cover as a volley of rocks slammed overhead. When he managed to get up, coughing and covered in dust, the entrance to the tunnel was gone. An entire section of wall had collapsed, leaving a slope of smoking rubble.
Hazel!
Frank's voice broke. He had to hope she and Leo were alive on the other side. He couldn't afford to think otherwise. Anger swelled in his chest. He turned and charged toward the monster army. Chapter 67. Frank. Frank was no expert on ghosts, but the dead legionnaires must have all been demigods because they were totally ADHD. They clawed their way out of the pit, then milled about aimlessly, chest bumping each other for no apparent reason, pushing one another back into the chasm, shooting arrows into the air as if trying to kill flies, and occasionally, out of sheer luck, throwing a javelin, a sword, or an ally in the direction of the enemy. Meanwhile, the army of monsters got thicker and angrier. Earthborn threw volleys of stones that plowed into the zombie legionnaires, crushing them like paper. Female demons with mismatched legs and fiery hair, Frank guessed they were Empusai, gnashed their fangs and shouted orders at the other monsters. A dozen cyclopes advanced on the crumbling bridges, while seal-shaped humanoids, telkines like Frank had seen in Atlanta, lobbed vials of Greek fire across the chasm. There were even some wild centaurs in the mix, shooting flaming arrows and trampling their smaller allies underhoof. In fact, most of the enemy seemed to be armed with some kind of fiery weapon. Despite his new fireproof pouch, Frank found that extremely uncool. He pushed through the crowd of dead Romans, shooting down monsters until his arrows were spent, slowly making his way toward his friends. A little late, he realized, duh, he should turn into something big and powerful, like a bear or a dragon. As soon as the thought occurred, pain flared in his arm. He stumbled, looked down, and was incredulous to find an arrow shaft protruding from his left biceps. His sleeve was soaked with blood. The sight made him dizzy. Mostly, it made him angry. He tried to turn into a dragon, with no luck. The pain made it too hard to focus. Maybe he couldn't change shape while wounded. Great, he thought. Now I find out. He dropped his bow and picked up a sword from a fallen. Well, he actually wasn't sure what it was. Some sort of reptilian lady warrior with snake trunks instead of legs. He slashed his way forward, trying to ignore the pain and the blood dripping down his arm. About 5 meters ahead, Nico was swinging his black sword with one hand, holding the scepter of Diocletian aloft with the other. He kept shouting orders at the legionnaires, but they paid him no attention. Of course not, Frank thought. He's Greek. Jason and Piper stood at Nico's back. Jason summoned gusts of wind to blast aside javelins and arrows. He deflected a vial of Greek fire right up the throat of a griffin, which burst into flames and spiraled into the pit. Piper put her new sword to good use while spraying food from the cornucopia in her other hand, using hams, chickens, apples, and oranges as interceptor missiles. The air above the chasm turned into a fireworks show of flaming projectiles, exploding rocks, and fresh produce. Still, Frank's friends couldn't hold out forever. Jason's face was already beaded with sweat. He kept shouting in Latin, "Form ranks!" But the dead legionnaires wouldn't listen to him either. Some of the zombies were helpful just by standing in the way, blocking monsters and taking fire. If they kept getting mowed down, though, there wouldn't be enough of them left to organize.
"Make way!" Frank shouted.
To his surprise, the dead legionnaires parted for him. The closest ones turned and stared at him with blank eyes, as if waiting for further orders.
"Oh, great," Frank mumbled.
In Venice, Mars had warned him that his true test of leadership was coming. Frank's ghostly ancestor had urged him to take charge. But if these dead Romans wouldn't listen to Jason, why should they listen to him? Because he was a child of Mars. Or maybe because... The truth hit him. Jason wasn't quite Roman anymore. His time at Camp Half-Blood had changed him. Reyna had recognized that. Apparently, so did the undead legionnaires. If Jason no longer gave off the right sort of vibe or aura of a Roman leader... Frank made it to his friends as a wave of Cyclopes crashed into them. He lifted his sword to parry a Cyclops' club, then stabbed the monster in the leg, sending him backward into the pit. Another one charged. Frank managed to impale him, but blood loss was making him weak. His vision blurred. His ears rang. He was dimly aware of Jason on his left flank, deflecting the incoming missiles with wind. Piper on his right, yelling charm-speak commands, encouraging the monsters to attack each other or take a refreshing jump into the chasm. "It'll be fun," she promised. A few listened, but across the pit, the Impusai were countering her orders. Apparently, they had charm-speak too. The monsters crowded so thick around Frank that he could barely use his sword. The stench of their breath and body odor was almost enough to knock him out, even without the arrow throbbing in his arm. What was Frank supposed to do? He'd had a plan, but his thoughts were getting fuzzy.
"Stupid ghosts!" Nico shouted.
"They won't listen!"
Jason agreed.
That was it. Frank had to make the ghosts listen.
He summoned all his strength and yelled,
"Cohorts! Lock shields!"
The zombies around him stirred. They lined up in front of Frank, putting their shields together in a ragged defensive formation. But they were moving too slowly, like sleepwalkers, and only a few had responded to his voice.
"Frank, how did you do that?"
Jason yelled. Frank's head swam with pain. He forced himself not to pass out.
"I'm the ranking Roman officer," he said. They don't recognize you. Sorry.
Jason grimaced, but he didn't look particularly surprised.
How can we help?
Frank wished he had an answer. A griffin soared overhead, almost decapitating him with its talons. Nico smacked it with the scepter of Diocletian, and the monster veered into a wall.
"Orbem formate,"
Frank ordered. About 24 zombies obeyed, struggling to form a defensive ring around Frank and his friends. It was enough to give the demigods a little respite, but there were too many enemies pressing forward. Most of the ghostly legionnaires were still wandering around in a daze.
My rank, Frank realized.
All these monsters are rank, Piper yelled, stabbing a wild centaur.
No, Frank said. I'm only a centurion.
Jason cursed in Latin.
He means he can't control a whole legion. He's not of high enough rank.
Nico swung his black sword at another griffin.
Well then, promote him.
Frank's mind was sluggish. He didn't understand what Nico was saying.
Promote him?
How? Jason shouted in his best drill sergeant voice.
Frank Jong, I, Jason Grace, praetor of the 12th Legion Fulminata, give you my final order. I resign my post and give you emergency field promotion to praetor with the full powers of that rank. Take command of this legion.
Frank felt as if a door had opened somewhere in the House of Hades, letting in a blast of fresh air that swept through the tunnels. The arrow in his arm suddenly didn't matter. His thoughts cleared, his eyesight sharpened. The voices of Mars and Ares spoke in his mind, strong and unified.
Break them!
Frank hardly recognized his own voice when he yelled,
Legion! Agmen Formate!
Instantly, every dead legionnaire in the cavern drew his sword and raised his shield. They scrambled toward Frank's position, pushing and hacking monsters out of their way until they stood shoulder to shoulder with the comrades, arranging themselves in a square formation. Stones, javelins, and fire rained down, but now Frank had a disciplined defensive line sheltering them behind a wall of bronze and leather.
Archers! Frank yelled.
Eaculare flammas!
He didn't hold out much hope the command would work. The zombies' bows couldn't be in good shape, but to his surprise, several dozen ghostly skirmishers knocked arrows in unison. Their arrowheads caught fire spontaneously, and a flaming wave of death arched over the legion's line, straight into the enemy. Cyclopes fell, centaurs stumbled, a Telkine shrieked and ran in circles with a burning arrow impaled in his forehead. Frank heard a laugh behind him. He glanced back and couldn't believe what he saw. Nico D'Angelo was actually smiling.
That's more like it, Nico said. Let's turn this tide.
Cuneum formate, Frank yelled.
Advance with Pilla.
The zombie line thickened in the center, forming a wedge designed to break through the enemy host. They lowered their spears in a bristling row and pushed forward. Earthborn wailed and threw boulders. Cyclopes smashed their fists and clubs against the locked shields, but the zombie legionnaires were no longer paper targets. They had inhuman strength, hardly wavering under the fiercest attacks. Soon, the floor was covered with monster dust. The line of javelins chewed through the enemy like a set of giant teeth, felling ogres and snake women and hellhounds. Frank's archers shot griffins out of the air and caused chaos in the main body of the monster army across the chasm. Frank's forces began to take control of their side of the cavern. One of the stone bridges collapsed, but more monsters kept pouring over the other one. Frank would have to stop that.
Jason, he called. Can you fly a few legionnaires across the pit? The enemy's left flank is weak, see? Take it.
Jason smiled.
With pleasure.
Three dead Romans rose into the air and flew across the chasm. Then three more joined them. Finally, Jason flew himself across, and his squad began cutting through some very surprised-looking Telkines, spreading fear through the enemy's ranks.
Nico, Frank said, keep trying to raise the dead.
We need more numbers.
On it.
Nico lifted the scepter of Diocletian, which glowed even darker purple. More ghostly Romans seeped from the walls to join the fight. Across the chasm, Mpusai shouted commands in a language Frank didn't know, but the gist was obvious. They were trying to shore up their allies and keep them charging across the bridge.
Piper! Frank yelled. Counter those Mpusai! We need some chaos!
Thought you'd never ask.
She started catcalling at the female demons.
Your makeup is smeared. Your friend called you ugly. That one is making a face behind your back.
Soon, the vampire ladies were too busy fighting one another to shout any commands. The legionnaires moved forward, keeping up the pressure. They had to take the bridge before Jason got overwhelmed.
Time to lead from the front,
Frank decided. He raised his borrowed sword and called for a charge. Chapter 68. Frank didn't notice that he was glowing. Later, Jason told him that the blessing of Mars had shrouded him in red light, like it had in Venice. Javelins couldn't touch him. Rocks somehow got deflected. Even with an arrow sticking out of his left biceps, Frank had never felt so full of energy. The first Cyclops he met went down so quickly it was almost a joke. Frank sliced him in half from shoulder to waist. The big guy exploded into dust. The next Cyclops backed up nervously, so Frank cut his legs out from under him and sent him into the pit. The remaining monsters on their side of the chasm tried to retreat, but the Legion cut them down.
Tetsubo formation! Frank shouted. Single file! Advance!
Frank was the first one across the bridge. The dead followed, their shields locked on either side and over their heads, deflecting all attacks. As the last of the zombies crossed, the stone bridge crumbled into the darkness. But by then, it didn't matter. Nico kept summoning more legionnaires to join the fight. Over the history of the Empire, thousands of Romans had served and died in Greece. Now they were back, answering the call of Diocletian's scepter. Frank waded forward, destroying everything in his path.
I will burn you!
Atelkine squeaked, desperately waving a vial of Greek fire.
I have fire!
Frank took him down. As the vial dropped toward the ground, Frank kicked it over the cliff before it could explode. An Mpusa raked her claws across Frank's chest, but Frank felt nothing. He sliced the demon into dust and kept moving. Pain was unimportant. Failure was unthinkable. He was a leader of the Legion now, doing what he was born to do, fighting the enemies of Rome, upholding its legacy, protecting the lives of his friends and comrades. He was Praetor Frank Zhang. His forces swept the enemy away, breaking their every attempt to regroup. Jason and Piper fought at his side, yelling defiantly. Nico waded through the last group of Earthborn, slashing them into mounds of wet clay with his black Stygian sword. Before Frank knew it, the battle was over. Piper chopped through the last Mpusa, who vaporized with an anguished wail.
Frank! Jason said, you're on fire.
He looked down. A few drops of oil must have splattered on his pants because they were starting to smolder. Frank batted at them until they stopped smoking, but he wasn't particularly worried. Thanks to Leo, he no longer had to fear fire. Nico cleared his throat.
You also have an arrow sticking through your arm. I know.
Frank snapped off the point of the arrow and pulled out the shaft by the tail. He felt only a warm, tugging sensation.
I'll be fine.
Piper made him eat a piece of ambrosia. As she bandaged his wound, she said,
Frank, you were amazing, completely terrifying, but amazing.
Frank had trouble processing her words. Terrifying couldn't apply to him. He was just Frank. His adrenaline drained away. He looked around him, wondering where all the enemies had gone. The only monsters left were his own undead Romans, standing in a stupor with their weapons lowered. Nico held up his scepter, its orb dark and dormant.
The dead won't stay much longer, now that the battle is over.
Frank faced his troops.
Legion!
The zombie soldiers snapped to attention.
You fought well,
Frank told them.
Now you may rest. Dismissed.
They crumbled into piles of bones, armor, shields, and weapons. Then even those disintegrated. Frank felt as if he might crumble too. Despite the ambrosia, his wounded arm began to throb. His eyes were heavy with exhaustion. The blessing of Mars faded, leaving him depleted. But his work wasn't done yet.
Hazel and Leo, he said, we need to find them.
His friends peered across the chasm. At the other end of the cavern, the tunnel Hazel and Leo had entered was buried under tons of rubble.
We can't go that way, Nico said. Maybe.
Suddenly, he staggered. He would have fallen if Jason hadn't caught him.
Nico,
Piper said.
What is it?
The doors, Nico said. Something's happening. Percy and Annabeth, we need to go now.
But how? Jason said. That tunnel is gone.
Frank clenched his jaw. He hadn't come this far to stand around helplessly while his friends were in trouble.
It won't be fun, he said, but there's another way.
Chapter 69. Annabeth. Getting killed by Tartarus didn't seem like much of an honor. As Annabeth stared up at his dark whirlpool face, she decided she'd rather die in some less memorable way, maybe falling down the stairs or going peacefully in her sleep at age 80 after a nice, quiet life with Percy. Yes, that sounded good. It wasn't the first time Annabeth had faced an enemy she couldn't defeat by force. Normally, this would have been her cue to stall for time with some clever Athena-like chit-chat. Except her voice wouldn't work. She couldn't even close her mouth. For all she knew, she was drooling as badly as Percy did when he slept. She was dimly aware of the army of monsters swirling around her, but after their initial roar of triumph, the horde had fallen silent. Annabeth and Percy should have been ripped to pieces by now. Instead, the monsters kept their distance, waiting for Tartarus to act. The god of the pit flexed his fingers, examining his own polished black talons. He had no expression, but he straightened his shoulders as if he were pleased.
It is good to have form, he intoned. With these hands, I can eviscerate you.
His voice sounded like a backward recording, as if the words were being sucked into the vortex of his face rather than projected. In fact, everything seemed to be drawn toward the face of this god. The dim light, the poisonous clouds, the essence of the monsters, even Annabeth's own fragile life force. She looked around and realized that every object on this vast plain had grown a vaporous comet's tail, all pointing toward Tartarus. Annabeth knew she should say something, but her instincts told her to hide, to avoid doing anything that would draw the god's attention. Besides, what could she say? You won't get away with this. That wasn't true. She and Percy had only survived this long because Tartarus was savoring his new form. He wanted the pleasure of physically ripping them to pieces. If Tartarus wished, Annabeth had no doubt he could devour her existence with a single thought, as easily as he'd vaporized Hyperion and Krios.
Would there be any rebirth from that? Annabeth didn't want to find out. Next to her, Percy did something she'd never seen him do. He dropped his sword. It just fell out of his hand and hit the ground with a thud. Death mist no longer shrouded his face, but he still had the complexion of a corpse. Tartarus hissed again, possibly laughing.
"Your fear smells wonderful," said the god. "I see the appeal of having a physical body with so many senses. Perhaps my beloved Gia is right, wishing to wake from her slumber."
He stretched out his massive purple hand and might have plucked up Percy like a weed, but Bob interrupted.
"Begone!"
The Titan leveled his spear at the god.
"You have no right to meddle."
"Meddle?" Tartarus turned. "I am the lord of all creatures of the darkness, puny Iapetus. I can do as I please."
His black cyclone face spun faster. The howling sound was so horrible, Annabeth fell to her knees and clutched her ears. Bob stumbled, the wispy comet tail of his life force growing longer as it was sucked toward the face of the god. Bob roared in defiance. He charged and thrust his spear at Tartarus's chest. Before it could connect, Tartarus swatted Bob aside like he was a pesky insect. The Titan went sprawling.
"Why do you not disintegrate?" Tartarus mused. "You are nothing. You are even weaker than Krios and Hyperion."
"I am Bob," said Bob.
Tartarus hissed.
"What is that? What is Bob?"
"I choose to be more than Iapetus," said the Titan. "You do not control me. I am not like my brothers."
The collar of his coveralls bulged. Small Bob leaped out. The kitten landed on the ground in front of his master, then arched his back and hissed at the Lord of the Abyss. As Annabeth watched, Small Bob began to grow, his form flickering, until the little kitten had become a full-sized, translucent, skeletal, saber-toothed tiger.
"Also," Bob announced, "I have a good cat."
No longer small, Bob sprang at Tartarus, sinking his claws into Tartarus's thigh. The tiger scrambled up his leg, straight under the god's chain-link skirt. Tartarus stomped and howled, apparently no longer enamored with having a physical form. Meanwhile, Bob thrust his spear into the god's side, right below his breastplate. Tartarus roared. He swatted at Bob, but the Titan backed out of reach. Bob thrust out his fingers. His spear yanked itself free of the god's flesh and flew back to Bob's hand, which made Annabeth gulp in amazement. She'd never imagined a broom could have so many useful features. Small Bob dropped out of Tartarus's skirt. He ran to his master's side, his saber-toothed fangs dripping with golden ichor.
"You will die first, Iapetus," Tartarus decided. "Afterward, I will add your soul to my armor, where it will slowly dissolve, over and over, in eternal agony."
Tartarus pounded his fist against his breastplate. Milky faces swirled in the metal, silently screaming to get out. Bob turned toward Percy and Annabeth. The Titan grinned, which probably would not have been Annabeth's reaction to a threat of eternal agony.
"Take the doors," Bob said. "I will deal with Tartarus."
Tartarus threw back his head and bellowed, creating a vacuum so strong that the nearest flying demons were pulled into his vortex face and shredded.
Deal with me? The god mocked. You are only a titan, a lesser child of Gia. I will make you suffer for your arrogance. And as for your tiny mortal friends...
Tartarus swept his hand toward the monster army, beckoning them forward.
Destroy them!
Chapter 70. Annabeth.
Destroy them!
Annabeth had heard those words often enough that they shocked her out of her paralysis. She raised her sword and yelled, Percy! He snatched up Riptide. Annabeth dove for the chains holding the doors of death. Her dragon-bone blade cut through the left side moorings in a single swipe. Meanwhile, Percy drove back the first wave of monsters. He stabbed in a wry and yelped, Gah! Stupid curses! Then he scythed down a half dozen Telkines. Annabeth lunged behind him and sliced through the chains on the other side. The doors shuddered, then opened with a pleasant ding. Bob and his saber-toothed sidekick continued to weave around Tartarus's legs, attacking and dodging to stay out of his clutches. They didn't seem to be doing much damage, but Tartarus lurched around, obviously not used to fighting in a humanoid body. He swiped and missed, swiped and missed. More monsters surged toward the doors. A spear flew past Annabeth's head. She turned and stabbed an Empusa through the gut, then dove for the doors as they started to close. She kept them open with her foot as she fought. At least with her back to the elevator car, she didn't have to worry about attacks from behind.
Percy, get over here, she yelled.
He joined her in the doorway, his face dripping with sweat and blood from several cuts.
You okay? She asked.
He nodded.
Got some kind of pain curse from that awry.
He hacked a griffin out of the air.
Hurts, but it won't kill me. Get in the elevator. I'll hold the button.
Yeah, right.
She smacked a carnivorous horse in the snout with the butt of her sword and sent the monster stampeding through the crowd.
You promised, Seaweed Brain, we would not get separated, ever again.
You're impossible.
Love you too.
An entire phalanx of cyclopes charged forward, knocking smaller monsters out of the way. Annabeth figured she was about to die.
It had to be cyclopes, she grumbled.
Percy gave a battle cry. At the cyclopes' feet, a red vein in the ground burst open, spraying the monsters with liquid fire from the phlegathon. The fire water might have healed mortals, but it didn't do the cyclopes any favors. They combusted in a tidal wave of heat. The burst vein sealed itself, but nothing remained of the monsters except a row of scorch marks.
Annabeth, you have to go, Percy said. We can't both stay.
No, she cried. Duck!
He didn't ask why. He crouched, and Annabeth vaulted over him, bringing her sword down on the head of a heavily tattooed ogre. Percy and she stood shoulder to shoulder in the doorway, waiting for the next wave. The exploding vein had given the monsters pause, but it wouldn't be long before they remembered, Hey, wait. There's 75 gazillion of us, and only 2 of them.
Well then, Percy said, you have a better idea?
Annabeth wished she did. The doors of death stood right behind them, their exit from this nightmarish world. But they couldn't use the doors without someone manning the controls for 12 long minutes. If they stepped inside and let the doors close without someone holding the button, Annabeth didn't think the results would be healthy. And if they stepped away from the doors for any reason, she imagined the elevator would close and disappear without them. The situation was so pathetically sad, it was almost funny.
The crowd of monsters inched forward, snarling and gathering their courage. Meanwhile, Bob's attacks were getting slower. Tartarus was learning to control his new body. Saber-toothed small Bob lunged at the god, but Tartarus smacked the cat sideways. Bob charged, bellowing with rage, but Tartarus grabbed his spear and yanked it out of his hands. He kicked Bob downhill, knocking over a row of telkines like sea mammal bowling pins.
"Yield!" Tartarus thundered.
"I will not," Bob said. "You are not my master."
"Die in defiance, then," said the god of the pit. "You titans are nothing to me. My children, the giants, were always better, stronger, and more vicious. They will make the upper world as dark as my realm."
Tartarus snapped the spear in half. Bob wailed in agony. Saber-toothed small Bob leaped to his aid, snarling at Tartarus and baring his fangs. The Titan struggled to rise, but Annabeth knew it was over. Even the monsters turned to watch, as if sensing that their master, Tartarus, was about to take the spotlight. The death of a Titan was worth seeing. Percy gripped Annabeth's hand.
"Stay here. I've got to help him."
"Percy, you can't," she croaked. "Tartarus can't be fought. Not by us."
She knew she was right. Tartarus was in a class by himself. He was more powerful than the gods or titans. Demigods were nothing to him. If Percy charged to help Bob, he would get squashed like an ant. But Annabeth also knew that Percy wouldn't listen. He couldn't leave Bob to die alone. That just wasn't him. And that was one of the many reasons she loved him. Even if he was an Olympian-sized pain in the podex.
"We'll go together,"
Annabeth decided, knowing this would be their final battle. If they stepped away from the doors, they would never leave Tartarus. At least they would die fighting side by side. She was about to say, "Now!" A ripple of alarm passed through the army. In the distance, Annabeth heard shrieks, screams, and a persistent boom, boom, boom that was too fast to be the heartbeat in the ground. More like something large and heavy running at full speed. An Earthborn spun into the air as if he'd been tossed. A plume of bright green gas billowed across the top of the monstrous horde, like the spray from a poison riot hose. Everything in its path dissolved. Across the swath of sizzling, newly empty ground, Annabeth saw the cause of the commotion. She started to grin. The Meonian dragon spread its frilled collar and hissed, its poison breath filling the battlefield with the smell of pine and ginger. It shifted its 100-foot-long body, flicking its dappled green tail and wiping out a battalion of ogres. Riding on its back was a red-skinned giant with flowers in his rust-colored braids, a jerkin of green leather, and a draken rib lance in his hand.
"Damison!" Annabeth cried.
The giant inclined his head.
"Annabeth Chase, I took your advice. I chose myself a new fate."
Chapter 71. Annabeth.
"What is this?"
the god of the pit hissed.
"Why have you come, my disgraced son?"
Damison glanced at Annabeth, a clear message in his eyes. "Go, now." He turned toward Tartarus. The Meonian dragon stamped its feet and snarled.
"Father, you wished for a more worthy opponent?"
Damison asked calmly.
"I am one of the giants you are so proud of. You wished me to be more warlike?
Perhaps I will start by destroying you.
Damison leveled his lance and charged.
The monstrous army swarmed him, but the Meonian dragon flattened everything in its path, sweeping its tail and spraying poison while Damison jabbed at Tartarus, forcing the god to retreat like a cornered lion. Bob stumbled away from the battle, his saber-toothed cat at his side. Percy gave them as much cover as he could, causing blood vessels in the ground to burst one after the other. Some monsters were vaporized in Styx water. Others got a cocytus shower and collapsed, weeping hopelessly. Others were doused with liquid lethe and stared blankly around them, no longer sure where they were or even who they were. Bob limped to the doors. Golden ichor flowed from the wounds on his arms and chest. His janitor's outfit hung in tatters. His posture was twisted and hunched, as if Tartarus's breaking the spear had broken something inside him. Despite all that, he was grinning, his silver eyes bright with satisfaction. "Go," he ordered. "I will hold the button."
Percy gawked at him.
"Bob, you're in no condition..." "Percy!"
Annabeth's voice threatened to break. She hated herself for letting Bob do this, but she knew it was the only way.
"We have to.
We can't just leave them."
"You must, friend."
Bob clapped Percy on the arm, nearly knocking him over.
"I can still press a button, and I have a good cat to guard me."
Small Bob, the saber-toothed, growled in agreement.
"Besides," Bob said, "it is your destiny to return to the world. Put an end to this madness of Gia."
A screaming cyclops, sizzling from poison spray, sailed over their heads. 50 yards away, the Meonian dragon trampled through monsters, its feet making sickening squish, squish noises as if stomping grapes. On its back, Damison yelled insults and jabbed at the god of the pit, taunting Tartarus farther away from the doors. Tartarus lumbered after him, his iron boots making craters in the ground.
"You cannot kill me," he bellowed. "I am the pit itself. You might as well try to kill the earth. Gia and I, we are eternal. We own you. Flesh and spirit."
He brought down his massive fist, but Damison sidestepped, impaling his javelin in the side of Tartarus's neck. Tartarus growled, apparently more annoyed than hurt. He turned his swirling vacuum face toward the giant, but Damison got out of the way in time. A dozen monsters were sucked into the vortex and disintegrated.
"Bob, don't!"
Percy said, his eyes pleading.
"He'll destroy you permanently. No coming back. No regeneration."
Bob shrugged.
"Who knows what will be? You must go now. Tartarus is right about one thing. We cannot defeat him. We can only buy you time."
The doors tried to close on Annabeth's foot.
12 minutes, said the Titan. "I can give you that."
"Percy, hold the doors!"
Annabeth jumped and threw her arms around the Titan's neck. She kissed his cheek, her eyes so full of tears she couldn't see straight. Bob's stubbly face smelled of cleaning supplies, fresh lemony furniture polish, and Murphy oil wood soap.
"Monsters are eternal," she told him, trying to keep herself from sobbing. "We will remember you and Damison as heroes, as the best Titan and the best giant. We'll tell our children. We'll keep the story alive. Someday you will regenerate."
Bob ruffled her hair. Smile lines crinkled around his eyes.
"That is good. Until then, my friends, tell the sun and the stars hello for me. And be strong.
This may not be the last sacrifice you must make to stop Gia.
He pushed her away gently.
No more time. Go.
Annabeth grabbed Percy's arm. She dragged him into the elevator car. She had one last glimpse of the Meonian dragon shaking an ogre like a sock puppet, Damison jabbing at Tartarus's legs. The god of the pit pointed at the doors of death and yelled,
"Monsters! Stop them!"
Small Bob, the saber-toothed, crouched and snarled, ready for action. Bob winked at Annabeth.
"Hold the doors closed on your side," he said. "They will resist your passage. Hold them!"
The panels slid shut. Chapter 72. Annabeth.
"Percy, help me!"
Annabeth yelped. She shoved her entire body against the left door, pressing it toward the center. Percy did the same on the right. There were no handles or anything else to hold on to. As the elevator car ascended, the doors shook and tried to open, threatening to spill them into whatever was between life and death. Annabeth's shoulders ached. The elevator's easy listening music didn't help. If all monsters had to hear that song about liking piña coladas and getting caught in the rain, no wonder they were in the mood for carnage when they reached the mortal world.
"We left Bob and Damison," Percy croaked. "They'll die for us, and we just..."
"I know," she murmured. "Gods of Olympus, Percy, I know."
Annabeth was almost glad for the job of keeping the doors closed. The terror racing through her heart at least kept her from dissolving into misery. Abandoning Damison and Bob had been the hardest thing she'd ever done. For years at Camp Half-Blood, she had chafed as other campers went on quests while she stayed behind. She'd watched as others gained glory, or failed and didn't come back. Since she was 7 years old, she had thought,
"Why don't I get to prove my skills? Why can't I lead a quest?"
Now, she realized that the hardest test for a child of Athena wasn't leading a quest or facing death in combat. It was making the strategic decision to step back, to let someone else take the brunt of the danger, especially when that person was your friend. She had to face the fact that she couldn't protect everyone she loved. She couldn't solve every problem. She hated it, but she didn't have time for self-pity. She blinked away her tears.
"Percy, the doors!" she warned.
The panels had started to slide apart, letting in a whiff of... ozone? Sulfur? Percy pushed on his side furiously, and the crack closed. His eyes blazed with anger. She hoped he wasn't mad at her, but if he was, she couldn't blame him. If it keeps him going, she thought, then let him be angry.
"I will kill Gia," he muttered. "I will tear her apart with my bare hands."
Annabeth nodded, but she was thinking about Tartarus's boast. He could not be killed. Neither could Gia. Against such power, even titans and giants were hopelessly outmatched. Demigods stood no chance. She also remembered Bob's warning. "This may not be the last sacrifice you must make to stop Gia." She felt that truth deep in her bones.
12 minutes, she murmured. "Just 12 minutes.
She prayed to Athena that Bob could hold the up button that long. She prayed for strength and wisdom. She wondered what they would find once they reached the top of this elevator ride. If their friends weren't there, controlling the other side.
"We can do this," Percy said. "We have to."
"Yeah," Annabeth said. "Yeah, we do."
They held the doors shut as the elevator shuddered and the music played, while somewhere below them, a titan and a giant, sacrificed their lives for their escape. Chapter 73. Hazel. Hazel wasn't proud of crying. After the tunnel collapsed, she wept and screamed like a 2-year-old throwing a tantrum. She couldn't move the debris that separated her and Leo from the others. If the earth shifted any more, the entire complex might collapse on their heads. Still, she pounded her fists against the stones and yelled curses that would have earned her a mouthwashing with lye soap back at St. Agnes Academy. Leo stared at her, wide-eyed and speechless. She wasn't being fair to him. The last time the two of them had been together, she'd zapped him into her past and shown him Sammy, his great-grandfather, Hazel's first boyfriend. She'd burdened him with emotional baggage he didn't need and left him so dazed they had almost gotten killed by a giant shrimp monster. Now, here they were, alone again, while their friends might be dying at the hands of a monster army, and she was throwing a fit.
Sorry.
She wiped her face. Hey, you know, Leo shrugged. I've attacked a few rocks in my day. She swallowed with difficulty.
Frank is... he's...
Listen, Leo said. Frank Zhang has moves. He's probably going to turn into a kangaroo and do some marsupial jujitsu on their ugly faces. He helped her to her feet. Despite the panic simmering inside her, she knew Leo was right. Frank and the others weren't helpless. They would find a way to survive. The best thing she and Leo could do was carry on. She studied Leo. His hair had grown out longer and shaggier, and his face was leaner, so he looked less like an imp and more like one of those willowy elves in the fairy tales. The biggest difference was his eyes. They constantly drifted, as if Leo was trying to spot something over the horizon.
Leo, I'm sorry, she said.
He raised an eyebrow.
Okay, for what?
For... She gestured around her helplessly.
Everything. For thinking you were Sammy, for leading you on. I mean, I didn't mean to, but if I did...
Hey. He squeezed her hand, though Hazel sensed nothing romantic in the gesture. Machines are designed to work.
What?
I figure the universe is basically like a machine. I don't know who made it. If it was the fates, or the gods, or capital G God, or whatever. But it chugs along the way it's supposed to most of the time. Sure, little pieces break and stuff goes haywire once in a while, but mostly, things happen for a reason. Like you and me meeting.
Leo Valdez, Hazel marveled. You're a philosopher.
Nah. He said, I'm just a mechanic, but I figure my bisabuelo Sammy knew what was what. He let you go, Hazel. My job is to tell you that it's okay. You and Frank, you're good together. We're all going to get through this. I hope you guys get a chance to be happy. Besides, Zhang couldn't tie his shoes without your help.
That's mean,
Hazel chided. But she felt like something was untangling inside her, a knot of tension she'd been carrying for weeks. Leo really had changed. Hazel was starting to think she'd found a good friend.
What happened to you when you were on your own? She asked. Who did you meet?
Leo's eye twitched.
Long story. I'll tell you sometime, but I'm still waiting to see how it shakes out.
The universe is a machine, Hazel said, so it'll be fine.
Hopefully.
As long as it's not one of your machines, Hazel added, because your machines never do what they're supposed to.
Yeah, ha ha.
Leo summoned fire into his hand.
Now, which way, Miss Underground?
Hazel scanned the path.